You are listening to Pacifica Radio's national broadcast of the former FBI Director James Comey's testimony before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. I'm Askia Muhammad, and I'm joined by my co-host, KPFA's Mitch Jezrich in Berkeley, California. Wow, Mitch.
Can I just say how odd I found that last exchange between John McCain and James Comey?
It was odd.
John McCain was trying to equate the investigation, the FBI investigation, into Hillary Clinton's use of her emails and her email server during her time as Secretary of State, and also the investigation into Russia. And those were two entirely different investigations that, as far as I know, and maybe John McCain knows something I don't, maybe he just wasn't able to express it well, something I can understand very, very much. But these were two completely different investigations that I have no idea if there's anything related to them. So I found that very odd. I actually found that James Comey found the line of questioning odd and was having trouble figuring out what John McCain was trying to get at. What John McCain was trying to get at is, he thinks it's odd that Hillary Clinton, the investigation over Hillary Clinton, is now over, while the investigation into Russia and maybe Donald Trump's involvement or potential collusion is not, even though there hasn't been investigation into Donald Trump specifically. So anyways, I just found that happened at the very end, and I just found it to be quite odd.
Yes, it was interesting because, again, I guess that John McCain is a member of the larger committee and not of the select committee, and he inserted himself into this hearing on his own and was not originally intended to be one of the questioners. So he obviously was trying to make a point.
And that's what it was, I think that Comey was willing to say that the investigation into Hillary Clinton is closed, while he was not willing and has not, or at least as FBI, was not willing to publicly say that the investigation was closed over Donald Trump. But again, these were two very different investigations, and I did find that strange. I found the hearing overall, though, Askia, interesting, perhaps more interesting than I was expecting. Again, this is the Senate Intelligence Select Committee, and what that means is this is not an investigation into criminality, or the committee itself has no ability to indict anybody over these hearings. That's purely the purview of Robert Mueller. It's a special counsel who is conducting his own investigation. But with the Senate investigation, also the House Intelligence investigation, what these are really about is trying to get the story of what actually happened. Both of these committees, the House and also the Senate Intelligence Committees, will come out with final reports after their investigations are done. And so this is how we get the information public through their own investigation. And what this particularly was focusing in on wasn't, I mean, obviously this is in the background in the of the Russian investigation, but what this is really about is James Comey's relationship and conversations that he had with Donald Trump between January 6th and April 11th, in which there were 9 separate private meetings between Comey and Trump, which is unusual if you compare it to in the 3 years that Comey was FBI director under the Obama years. They only met privately twice, once to discuss issues about race and law enforcement, and then the second time was just Comey saying goodbye to Barack Obama on his way out of the White House. And so what that really gets us to is this is an issue, and what this hearing was really about, even though James Comey wasn't willing to say it, is if there was any obstruction of justice by Donald Trump on James Comey and the FBI in investigating this issue over Russia. So what we got today, and we got a lot of this through the opening statement that he actually published yesterday and did not read today, but we got his narrative, right? And that you get these series of hearings that begin in January 6th and go all the way up. And he outlines 5 in particular that goes all the way to April 11th. And through these multiple conversations, we hear that one thing that surprised James Comey is that Donald Trump, in one of his early meetings when they were having dinner, asked and talked to him about whether or not he wanted to keep his job as FBI director. And Comey said that he felt that conversation. I'm sorry?
Hint, hint, hint.
Right. Well, and the thing is they've already talked before that meeting as to whether or not James Comey would stay on, and James Comey indicated he would like to already stay on. So we thought that was strange in itself that they were talking about it once again. And that's what will get us to this issue over patronage relationship that James Comey accused Donald Trump of trying to form. In other words, he thought that Donald Trump was saying that you'll be able to keep your job in exchange for something else. And what that something else might have been, though not conclusive, is because then Trump also told Comey that he wished that the investigation into then National Security Advisor Michael Flynn would end. Trump told Comey multiple times that he expects loyalty from him. And then on February 14th, and I found this interesting, this is the meeting at the Oval Office, and Trump brought all the heads of the intelligence agencies and many other into the Oval Office for a meeting. James Comey was a part of that meeting. When the meeting ended, Donald Trump directed everyone except for James Comey to leave the office. And as everyone leave, there were two people who tried not to leave. It sounds like James Comey believes both Jeff Sessions as Attorney General and then also Jared Kushner, a top advisor and also son-in-law to Donald Trump, seemed to linger on. And James Comey thought because they also understood that it would be inappropriate for Donald Trump to have this conversation with James Comey. And then Donald Trump had to tell both Sessions and Kushner to leave again because he wanted to speak privately with him. So, you know, we're getting these conversations, and it's interesting, and I think what people are really going to take away from today's hearing is that James Comey believes that he had to begin taking notes immediately after that first meeting and after every meeting they had had since, because he feared that Donald Trump would lie about the details of their meeting.
Excellent.
Now, I don't know.
Excellent. Yeah. I mean, that's a great point, Mitch. And, you know, you raised the question about the multiple investigations. And I wondered also, does one investigation, this Senate investigation, supersede the other, the special counsel investigation and the what irrelevant House investigation. You know, Mitch, we're joined now by Gloria Brown Marshall. She's an associate professor of constitutional law at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, and she's the author of The Voting Rights War, the NAACP and the Ongoing Struggle for Justice. She's a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court and a host of WBAI's Law of the Land. She joins us now from New York. Welcome, Gloria Brown Marshall.
Thank you,
Sia. I wanted to ask you and of this, probably the most interesting social media comment I saw was, quote, "Wake up, Sam Ervin. You don't want to miss this." Sam Ervin being the North Carolina senator who famously made a name for himself during the Watergate investigations. Do we have a Sam Ervin or a Watergate moment here in what you've seen?
Well, I remember being a very young child and spending my summer watching the Watergate hearings and listening to Sam Ervin's drawl. So I am interested in not just this particular hearing, but also yesterday's hearing, and because both of them are giving us information about how our government works in the behind-the-scenes ways in which it can be manipulated inside and outside of the country. I see Angus King from Maine as being that Sam Ervin-type voice in his directness and in the way in which he is pushing the envelope and trying to find out what's going on. I was also confused about what, if anything, that McCain brought to the discussion. But I want to talk about this, too. And this is something that, from a legal standpoint, I'll discuss things, but from the standpoint of the way in which Senator Kamala Harris was poorly treated yesterday and also given short shrift, McCain was not chastised by the chair. He continued to speak after they had gaveled him to silence, and he just continued to ask questions. So we still have to look at how this committee is run, a very patriarchal type of way in which certain people are allowed to do certain things. And, you know, Harris from California is one of the junior members, and McCain is a friend of all and been on these committees a long time. But he was an outsider, and she was given short shrift, and she's on the actual Select Committee, Intelligence Committee. I will say one thing, going back to what was mentioned, the power of perjury is something that this committee has, and that's why it's swearing in people who are speaking before it. They may not be able to bring criminal charges, though, for obstruction of justice, but they can say that someone perjured themselves because they gave unclear testimony when they knew the facts but acted as though they didn't know, saying, I don't remember, when at another time it can be found that they did indeed remember, but their intent was to be obtuse, but at the same time lying or saying directly, and that's why that they didn't know, or saying something that's actually untrue. That's why when they kept asking the same questions yesterday and today, you're seeing them trying to narrow down what these people knew, when they knew it, which goes back to Nixon. What did he know and when did he know it?
I'd like to ask both of you, or as it occurs to me, what, did we see or have we smelled the fumes of the smoking gun?
I'm going to just say this. When it comes down to that request, I hope you will let this Flynn thing go. I hope you will let it go. The he said, she said of, you know, I think it is fair for the head of the FBI in hearing these words from the President of the United States, because these people in government, and I, for full disclosure, my mother retired from the Social Security Administration. My father retired from a defense plant, federal defense plant. I just want you to know they're trained over time to respect the hierarchy, even if you don't respect the person in the position. It's like the military. You respect the rank, even if you don't respect the person who has the rank. And I can see Comey saying, this guy who is President of the United States, even though I don't respect him personally, because earlier in the year, if you think, this salacious material, no one's talking about the salacious material that the Russians had on Trump that Comey brought to the office in January and said, you know, it's been said that it was some prostitutes that, you know, in Russia that Trump was hanging out with, and the Russians had this information on this converting with the prostitutes. But, you know, he didn't respect the man, but he respected the position. And I can see Comey saying, you know, I'm taking this as a directive, because as the president, you're telling me to drop this Flynn thing. As the senators, I think, were saying, oh, you could have said that's not right for you to say. You could have said, what do you mean by that? And I don't think that happens. Even in day-to-day work life, when a supervisor says something, they don't have to give a direct command, but you know what they're saying, you know what they want, and they would take it as a directive.
On this obstruction of justice issue, is there a threshold? Because, again, what Comey is saying is that Trump said that he wished that the investigation would come to an end. He did not direct Comey to end the investigation. Comey, after this meeting and after Trump said that, did not end the investigation into Michael Flynn. So where is the threshold for being able to make the case that there is obstruction of justice?
Well, that's what's so interesting. When you go back to United States versus Nixon, and actually I played the United States versus Nixon part of the oral argument, and the Chief Justice Warren Burger's decision in that case, it was conspiracy to obstruct justice that was the criminal charges brought against the people with in the Nixon White House, conspiracy to obstruct justice. So the idea goes back to intent, and that's what's difficult to prove. When you listen to the Nixon tapes, and I've had a chance to listen to some of them, he says things like, what can we do about that? Is there anything we can do to make this, you know, what can you do? How can we do this? What are we going to, he doesn't say, you go out there and you go break in there and you go do this. And that's why I thought it was really interesting that they would mention Henry II and Archbishop Beckett and the murder of Archbishop Beckett. Because Henry II says, who will, you know, who will stop this person, you know, the archbishop, you know, because he's vexing me. And without saying directly, go kill him. And that was but the soldiers saw that as a directive, and they go out and kill Samuel Beckett. So this idea that somebody in the head of a government or the head of a job, anybody who's got this type of power, they don't have to give directives in a clear sense, but once again, when it comes to a court of law, it could be conspiracy to obstruct justice.
Well, you know, I think, and as both of you raised this point about Comey, I think the bravest thing that he did in his period, this tenure, was he shielded the FBI from the President of the United States, and he made that point, and the point that you just made. If the President of the United States says, I don't want this investigated and the FBI members involved in the investigation know, then they may indeed walk, tread lightly as a result of what they think the commander-in-chief is desirous of. And so what it seems that Comey's role was to shield the troops, and I think he used that expression once, from the influence of the commander-in-chief. I have to ask you this question, Gloria Brown Marshall, because it weighed on my mind as I thought about this hearing concerning the so many people, particularly Democrats, and people looked at this as being the event, and this is why I asked about the smoking gun, the event where the smoking gun would be revealed and the impeachment charges would be buttressed so that Donald Trump would be soon out of office. In fact, Al Green has introduced articles of impeachment in the House already. If the question is, should an impeachment article proceed and get a majority in the House of Representatives, which seems unlikely. You know the Constitution. If he were impeached and not convicted and removed from office, could he be impeached again in 2 years if he did something even worse than what he's done in his first 5 months?
Well, let me start off with two things. One, with Nixon, it was not one thing. There were a number of things. It was the firing. It was the part of the tapes for the smoking gun at the end. But there were many issues leading up to those tapes. It wasn't until those tapes were truly revealed for those holdouts from Republicans in the Senate that they said, okay, this is enough for me to vote. My concern is the Constitution doesn't set out how often a person can be impeached. It doesn't, the fact that the impeachment process itself is for high crimes and misdemeanors, does that trigger then the double jeopardy rule, which means a person can't be tried twice for the same crime? So I think that the Senate will be loath to try to start an impeachment process, have it go through, have it fail, and then start it again. It's too high a price for our democracy
to
pay.
Does that apply to impeachment? Because really, it's a political act, impeachment itself.
And that's why I said it's a tricky issue. If you're looking at it, it's a political act, but it has criminal consequences.
Well, it's almost as though the politicians
no
would not have the will.
Though. Well, wait, hold on, though, because there is no criminal consequences, because if you are impeached and if the Senate convicts you and you're booted out of office, you don't go to jail after that.
No, you don't go to jail, but it's what they say is for high crimes and misdemeanors. And so my concern is, how are they going to read this? Are they going to read it very narrowly, or are they going to read it in a wide sense? That even though leaving office is the worst thing, losing positions of importance and trust, just like I think Bill Clinton, even though he stayed in office, he lost his ability to practice law in federal court and before the U.S. Supreme Court, something he wasn't going to do anyway. I mean, my only concern is, since it's never been done before, what's the narrow construct and what's the wider one? And depending on how these senators can be convinced to go forward with articles of impeachment, I think they're going to want every assurance that not only do they have all the evidence to go forward, as the field pointed out, is it going to be something that they want to start now over the first 5 months or wait until things get worse? And I would say they're going to wait until things get worse. They do want that smoking gun, and if there are some tapes, they do want to know what the tapes say. I don't know if he was bluffing when he said there were tapes. He says these things, and as I pointed out before, and I wanted to correct it, as Thomas Becket with Archbishop in 1170. The issue of was it a directive, he said versus she said, he said, was it a directive, I want you to stop this investigation, or were you just putting forth an aspiration? We don't know, because Trump doesn't really speak in clear tones for the most part. He says these very abstract things. It's almost like Chancy the gardener in being there. He says things, and then we all import what we believe he's saying when he says it. But at this point, the belief is in criminal law on the side of the person who's hearing the word. Did he reasonably believe these were directives for him to drop this investigation? And did his firing, does he reasonably believe his firing came because he was working on the Russian investigation and wouldn't change in which that, the way in which that investigation was going?
Thank you very much for joining us and enlightening us, Gloria Brown Marshall, Associate Professor of Constitutional Law at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City and the author of Voting Rights War, the NAACP, and the Ongoing Struggle for Justice. She joined us from New York City. Joining us now, Mitch, from is David Cole. He's the National Legal Director of the American Civil Liberties Union. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What's your impression of what we've seen this morning? Is there cause for joy in Trumpville?
I don't think so. I mean, I think James Comey came across as a direct, highly credible witness describing very concerning communications in which the president sought to pressure the FBI director to end a criminal investigation of his national security advisor, Michael Flynn, and then ultimately fired Mr. Comey in the president's own words because of the Russia thing. You know, I think it underscores the gravity of what we have been reading about in the newspapers, but this time it's not through anonymous sources, it's not through secondhand testimony, it's direct testimony under oath from a highly credible witness.
Another thing we learned in today's testimony is that James Comey, after he was fired almost in the middle of the night, leaked his own memos to a friend who he said it was a professor at the University of Columbia in New York City. This is how we first got the first reports about Comey's account with his meetings with Donald Trump. David Cole, you're also with the ACLU. Any irony there, considering that during his term as FBI director, FBI was involved in investigating any other leakers during this time?
Well, I don't know that the memos were classified, so it's not a crime to leak the memos. So I don't know if that's. He was fired. He was fired. And initially, the Trump administration lied about why he was fired. They claimed that he was fired because of how he handled the Hillary Clinton email investigation. That was false. They lied when they said that he was fired because of mismanagement and problems of morale at the FBI. The truth. So, you know, when you've been fired by a president, he has sought to pressure you to drop an investigation and then fired you. I don't think it's particularly wrong for an individual in that situation to seek to defend himself, and these memos were not classified.
What's your take on this? The memos may not have been classified, but he is holding on to them. They haven't been made public. I don't even think the Senate Intelligence Committee has seen them yet, because I remember them requesting to see them during the hearing. But beyond that point, what is the threshold of obstruction of justice in this account that we've heard just from James Comey with his meetings with Donald Trump?
Well, you know, I think the question on obstruction of justice is whether someone has corruptly, that's the word that the statute uses, corruptly sought to impede an ongoing criminal investigation. There's no question that Trump sought to impede an ongoing criminal investigation. He brought Comey in. He dismissed all the other folks who might be witness to what he was seeking to do. And then he using the power of his office, which is the most powerful office in the world, asked Comey to close down the investigation. The question is, did he do it corruptly or not? Why did he do it? You know, and so, you know, if he did it because he concluded after a full study of the matter that going forward with this investigation would disclose some, you know, national secrets that would do more harm than good, that's one thing. That's probably a legitimate justification. But if he sought to close it down because he wanted to hide criminal conduct by someone in his administration, that sounds to me like corruptly.
We have a cut corruptly, it sounds like one of the comments that James Comey, former FBI director, made in his testimony today. There were some moments of levity, and this is practically one of them, like corruptly, lordy, lordy.
Let's go to the Flynn issue. Senator Risch outlined, I hope you could see your way to letting Flynn go. He's a good guy. I hope you can let this go. But you also said in your written remarks, and I quote, that you had understood the president to be requesting that we drop any investigation of Flynn in connection with false statements about his conversations with the Russian ambassador in December, end quote. Please go into that with more detail.
Well, the context and the president's words are what led me to that conclusion. As I said in my statement, I could be wrong, but Flynn had been forced to resign the day before. And the controversy around General Flynn at that point in time was centered on whether he had lied to the vice president about the nature of his conversations with the Russians, whether he had been candid with others in the course of that. And so that happens on the day before. On the 14th, the president makes specific reference to that. And so that's why I understood him to be saying that what he wanted me to do was drop any investigation connected to Flynn's account of his conversations with the Russians.
Now, here's the question. You're big, you're strong. I know the Oval Office, and I know what happens to people when they walk in. There is a certain amount of intimidation. But why didn't you stop and say, Mr. President, this is wrong. I cannot discuss this with you.
It's a great question. Maybe if I were stronger, I would have. I was so stunned by the conversation that I just took it in. And the only thing I could think to say, because I was playing in my mind, because I could remember every word he said, I was playing in my mind, what should my response be? And that's why I very carefully chose the words. And look, I've seen the tweet about tapes. Lordy, I hope there are tapes. I remember saying, I agree he's a good guy, as a way of saying I'm not agreeing with what you just asked me to do. Again, maybe other people would be stronger in that circumstance, but that's how I conducted myself. I hope I'll never have another opportunity. Maybe if I did it again, I would do it better.
And that was James Comey answering Senator Dianne Feinstein. We're joined now by Egberto Huiles. Host of Politics Done Right on KPFT out there where you're from, Mitch. Thank you for being with us, Egberto.
It's a pleasure being with you guys. How are you doing today?
Good, good. You, like Mitch, are up early watching these hearings. What's your take?
Well, my initial take is very uneventful, and, you know, all over the country, we had a whole lot of people going to pubs and all these things, believing that they were going to hear something that was going to be definitive and ready to bring the great President Trump down. And just as I thought, what we had was a bland description of what occurred. Now, we all know the type of man that Trump is, but I fear that too much of us are expecting too much out of this particular investigation from this bunch out there in Washington.
Expecting too much. David Cole, any chance that we're our expectations are too high and we're thinking impeachment too soon?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of there's a lot to impeach the president on right now, in my humble opinion, right? But nobody's actually talking about those things that he's not following the law about. But with respect to Russia, which likely, I believe personally, like Professor Dershowitz said, I think he's probably in the clear with Russia. I mean, it looks dirty, it looks horrendous, but from a statutory point of view, I think he's going to be in the clear ultimately. People don't want to hear that. I really think there are other things that we really need to be looking into, especially those of us on the left or on the progressive front.
So my sense is that he had the expectation that this hearing was going to be the hearing that brought Donald Trump down. Your expectations were too high coming into this. And if you
right.
follow congressional hearings for a number of years, you should have known that. But, I mean, even this is one person's testimony. However, I do think, and I actually found it more interesting than I thought it was going to be coming into the hearing, and particularly hearing Donald Trump, or not Donald Trump, sorry, James Comey, discussing that the reason he thought that, I mean, that he thought he had to take notes after every single meeting was because he feared that Donald Trump would lie about their conversations afterwards. This is an FBI director who is ahead of an investigation into whether, you know, again, the allegation that Russia interfered in the Russian election, and also looking at if there was collusion between the Trump campaign in this investigation. And you have an acting FBI director who was fired because, as Trump said himself, was investigating this. He didn't like how the investigation was going forward. So, I do think this is interesting. I do understand the critique that the amount of attention that is put on this. But this is pretty historic to have a former FBI director sit down in a congressional committee just a month after he's fired, saying that he feared that the president would lie about their conversation on these matters.
I hear what you say, and I take point with what you say. I wonder, though, if given that we're so conditioned that we now have a liar for a president, that it maybe that's one of the reasons personally it comes across uneventfully, and I think likely to many Americans it's going to be that way. Now, in everything that you said as well, I think given your political knowledge and how much you know about politics, you are able to discern that much more than the average American. And while I think that you are absolutely right in your analysis, I think when it comes to most Americans, let's say those folks that every so often listen to this type of coverage, they may not see it that way. Your way is correct, but they just may see it another way.
David Cole, what say you?
Well, I have more faith in the American people. I think it really is deeply troubling what we know thus far about what the president has done with respect to James Comey and with respect to attempting to close down an ongoing criminal investigation of his former advisor. Is deeply troubling, and is troubling to many, many people in this country. And I think it's part of why Donald Trump's approval ratings are as low as they are, the lowest of any president at this early point in his tenure. I think it's a little early to sort of write this off. This is really, really important stuff. It goes to, at the end of the day, it goes to both the rule of law, because you've got a president, at least from all appearances, seeking to interfere with an ongoing criminal investigation of a friend and high-level advisor. That's inconsistent with the notion that everybody is subject to the law, not just the vulnerable and the disadvantaged, but the powerful as well. What sort of swirling around here is the possibility of the Republican campaign's collusion with the Russians in seeking to meddle in the election. That goes to the core of our democracy. Our democracy rests on the legitimacy of elections. This is, I think, really, really critically important stuff. And I think the American people get that. I have more faith in the American people than maybe others do.
Mitch, Egberto attributed to your brilliant political knowledge and expertise. So come on with it. What should the left do now?
You're about to see how unbrilliant I actually am with it, because I don't know what the left should do now. What I look at these hearings is I just want to know the answer. And I want to know what happened. And I'm not entirely sure we'll ever even know fully what happened through all this. And I tend to agree with Egberto about, I suspect, and I'd actually be surprised if Donald Trump colluded with Russia over this, if Russia actually did the attacks. I mean, I'd like to see more of the information. So much is still classified and secret that, if we're talking, and we are talking, because we just did a moment ago, about the possibility of impeachment, because this is actually the avenue of impeachment. It's the only way you can really do anything to Trump while he's in office. I believe that's correct. We'll maybe get David Cole to comment on that in a moment. But I think the bigger issue here with Donald Trump is, again, this issue of obstruction of justice, right? And let's say Robert Mueller, in his investigation, finds that and determines that there was obstruction of justice. There's nothing really Robert Mueller can do himself. Is there, David Cole? He can't indict a sitting president, can he? I mean, he might be able to indict officials within the White House, but not the president himself.
Right. It's technically an open question because it hasn't happened, but it seems unlikely that you could indict a sitting president. That would give a prosecutor and a jury of 12 people the power to remove a president who was elected from office. And so most people have taken the position that a sitting president cannot actually be indicted as long as he is sitting. And the more proper role or procedure for dealing with criminal conduct by a president is impeachment. But that's, of course, a political judgment as much as it's a legal judgment. I don't think we're there yet. I do think, though, that, you know, it's serious enough that the Justice Department was compelled to appoint a special counsel, Robert Mueller, to investigate. That investigation, according to Comey, will include the possibility of obstruction of justice by the president. If he ultimately concludes there was obstruction of justice, I don't think he can indict, but he can report. And if he reports with facts, then the question is what do the American people and their representatives want to do with that? I don't think we're there until we get those facts all laid out. And that's one of the things Mueller is doing. I think.
And David Cole, National Legal Director of the ACLU.
Well, Eskia, can I get one last question in, David Cole, though, because I think this is important.
Oops. I'm still oopsing. And Egberto Viles of KPFT, host of the always informative program called, I'm having some oops moments here, Politics Done Right on KPFT. Thank you both for being with us. We are joined now by Elizabeth Goitein, co-director of Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center for Justice. Thank you for being with us.
You are listening to Pacifica's live broadcast of James Comey testimony to the Senate Intelligence Committee this morning. And I think we are having a little bit of technical difficulties.
We had an oops moment. It's one of those, dog ate the homework. I pulled the headphones out and couldn't hear. And then I misplaced papers and couldn't read. So blind, deaf, and dumb I was for a few seconds, and it was on live radio, as you said. We're joined now by Elizabeth Goitein, co-director of Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center for Justice. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks very much.
Obstruction of justice is one of the words that we have heard often in regard to this series of events. Do we have a smoking gun yet?
I think we do. I think Comey's testimony stood up in the hearing, and his testimony was that the president explicitly asked him to let it go. Those were his words, to let go of the investigation into Michael Flynn, the former national security advisor. And that right there is pretty much what obstruction of justice looks like. It's basically when somebody tries to impede or interfere with or obstruct the due administration of justice. And, you know, when the president asked the FBI director to lay off an investigation into his crony or his aide or his associate, that's a pretty strong case. And, you know, what I noticed was that the senator seemed, you know, particularly interested in challenging his credibility on all of this. They didn't try to say, well, this is a he said, she said. We'll have to wait to hear whether the president confirms these conversations. They didn't seem to want to mess with Comey's credibility. So it was more an effort on the part of sort of Trump's allies on the committee to try to sort of downplay the significance of this.
But the president said himself yesterday he feels vindicated by Comey's release testimony, and not by Comey's testimony, but by the hearings yesterday.
It's kind of bizarre because in the
by the hearings yesterday, the National Security Director and the DNI and the other guy, he said he felt vindicated because they said, he, you know, he's not a bad guy.
Right. Well, he, you know, and Comey said in his testimony that he had informed the president that he was not at that time under investigation. And that, you know, the president is seizing on that as vindication. But obviously the issues go much broader than the question of whether the president himself was a target of the investigation on a particular date. There is an ongoing investigation right now into whether the Trump campaign colluded with Russia to interfere with the United States election. There's no good news there for the president. I mean, the fact that he wasn't at the time under investigation doesn't mean he's not under investigation now, and it certainly doesn't mean that his administration is somehow off the hook politically or legally.
It doesn't mean he is being investigated now either. I would point out that, again, Comey said that he started writing these memos because he was fearful that Donald Trump would lie about his the details of the meeting at a later date. I haven't seen any evidence of that actually happening. The one thing that Trump said about his meetings with James Comey is that James Comey told Trump three times that he was that the president was not under investigation, and Comey confirmed that today.
Yeah,
well, actually, on two occasions, the White House and the president both disputed that the president ever asked Comey to back off of the Flynn investigation. So right after the memos were that Comey wrote were leaked and were described in the press, the White House issued a statement saying the president never asked Comey not to pursue the investigation into Flynn. And the president himself at a press conference was asked directly whether this was true, and he said no.
But
so in fact,
can that be just can that be getting, and maybe it's just getting into semantics here, but could you make the argument that he just expressed that he wished that the investigation would end, but it wasn't ordering it?
Well, I think Comey, didn't he say, yeah, well, I felt like this was a directive. And again, what is so unprecedented, and perhaps you can speak to this, Ms. Goitein, is he said he started the memos day one after the first meeting at Trump Tower on a secure computer after he left in the FBI car. It's like, oh, this stuff is really deep. And if I'm a step in this, I'm going to have some rubber shoes on.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty striking, I think. And he didn't really mince words about it. He said, you know, based on not just the nature of the conversations they were having, but the nature of the person.
Right.
But he said, based on who Trump is, he was concerned that he might lie. And he used the word lie, which a lot of people shy away from, and he didn't. So, I mean, that was pretty strong coming from him. And it seems that he wasn't just basing that on things Trump had said about the Russian investigation or about Comey, but really just in generally, just generally, he didn't seem to trust the word of this president.
Well, indeed, he did say he actually called Trump a liar. He said he lied, which is, as you said, very strong language. Is that strong enough to get an impeachment, you think?
Well, I mean, I think obstruction of justice, perjury, I suppose, it would be a basis, perhaps, in some context, you know, for impeachment. But we're not talking about perjury. I don't think any of this is under oath. So obstruction of justice, certainly there have been, you know, President Clinton, one of the articles of impeachment against him was for obstruction of justice. That was going to be the basis for impeaching Nixon before he resigned. So certainly it is a basis for impeachment. I'm not under any illusions that this Congress is in a hurry to impeach President Trump.
I guess it's very possible that if, let's just say there is an impeachment and the charge is obstruction of justice, it is very possible that you could be, even in regular legal, in regular court outside of the presidency, you could be indicted for obstruction of justice without actually having ever committed a crime.
Obstruction of justice is the crime. Right. I mean, that it is a criminal offense.
But the idea that you're trying to interfere with an investigation, it's possible that you could be innocent of what that investigation is even looking for.
Absolutely. It doesn't have to be an investigation into you, or it can be an investigation into you that in which you happen to be entirely innocent. Just the act of trying to interfere with the administration of justice is itself a crime. I mean, I should point out that the Department of Justice has long taken the position that a sitting president cannot be charged with a criminal offense. So, you know, even if it were the absolute conclusion of the Department of Justice that President Trump had violated the obstruction of justice laws, he would not be prosecuted for that. But, you know, you're correct. A person can be innocent of any other offense and still guilty of the offense of obstruction of justice.
Is there a place to have a conversation or raise the question about the FBI? All of a sudden, we have riding out on a white horse this this tall champion who is James Comey, who's become a champion and a hero because he's under fire by this troll who's living under the bridge eating the little lambs, Donald Trump. But the history of the FBI is not one that has been a protector always, certainly not in the civil rights movement, and those in the 1960s felt the sting of the FBI.
Absolutely. And I mean, I don't think, you know, I don't think there are any heroes necessarily in this story. There were certainly efforts on the part of some of the senators to try to poke holes in James' story, in Comey's story. Not so much, I think, to try to suggest that he wasn't telling the truth, but to just question his own conduct and his own judgment and all of this. Why didn't he report these things? Why did he leak his own notes of the conversations, et cetera? And more broadly, yes. I mean, the FBI has a fairly notorious history of cracking down on civil rights movements and conducting improper surveillance and intelligence gathering on Americans. Certainly after 9/11, the FBI was one of the agencies that really set its sights on Muslim American communities and began mapping out Muslim American communities specifically and keeping tabs on them, sending informants into mosques, that kind of thing. So it's not so much, I think, that the FBI in this case is the champion of our democratic freedoms exactly. I think this is really a very situational moment where we need to look at, you know, what the president did, what James Comey is saying the president did, whether he's credible, and if he is credible, what does that mean? What does that mean for our democracy? What does that mean for the rule of law?
Do you think the history of the FBI and this modern history of the FBI is germane to the conversation about Comey's testimony today? I mean, you pointed out the infiltration of Muslim communities, and of course, James Comey, as well as Robert Mueller, was the head of the FBI during the Bush administration. James Comey was a deputy director of the FBI during this time. This is a period we get the proliferation of so-called national security letters, allowing for surveillance and other things and requests of information without needing a proper, or when I say proper, that wouldn't be quite right, but a judge's warrant to be able to do that. Do you think that history, their involvement in the FBI over the past, 15 years, 12 or so, is germane to the discussion about that we're having today concerning Trump?
Only in the sense that I think it just reminds us that, Americans have a way of sort of falling in love with people and institutions. They fall in love with the president. They fall in love with the tall, handsome FBI director. They fall in love with the FBI because they're, you know, out there protecting us against the terrorists or that kind of thing. This isn't about, you know, we need to be clear-eyed. The founders of this country, the framers of our Constitution, expected Americans to have a healthy distrust of government, right? Not to view the president or the head of the FBI or anyone else as the solution to all of our problems, but to make sure that we have systems of transparency and accountability so that none of these people or entities would overstep, and never to just trust them. So I don't think we should just trust James Comey. I don't think we should just trust the FBI, and I don't think we should just trust President Trump. I think we need the facts. We need accountability. We need hearings like the one that Congress did today. We need the special counsel. We need all of this so we can get the truth out. You can't figure out the truth by deciding who you think the good guys and the bad guys are in advance. You have to sort of look at the actions and the facts.
Elizabeth Goitein, co-director of Liberty and National Security Programs at the Brennan Center for Justice, thank you for being with us on Pacific Radio's broadcast of these important Comey hearings.
Thanks so much.
We're joined now by Elliot Minkberg. He is a. Did I say that correctly? I probably
did. It's actually pronounced Mintzberg.
Mintzberg. Elliot Minkberg. He's a senior fellow at the People for the American Way. And we can, perhaps help get Mitch Jeselnik off the hook. We asked him, what should the progressive movement, what should the left do now? And he waxed in with his wisdom. But People for the American Way have millions of people all over the country in action and in political involvement. What is next? What can the people do now?
I think there's a number of critical things that can and should be done. First of all, I think we can and should continue to demand that there be a bipartisan independent commission to look into all of these issues, the critical issues that Mr. Comey so eloquently talked about the danger to our democracy now and in the future by Russian interference, and answering some questions that Mr. Comey again so carefully raised about clear misconduct by President Trump and by people working for him. Was there a tape of these conversations where Mr. Comey said quite clearly that he understood that the president was instructing him to drop an investigation against Mr. Flynn? If not, does Mr. Trump deny what Mr. Comey has said? He and his lawyers were quite happy to talk yesterday about their contention that this somehow lets them off the hook because Mr. Comey said that there was no investigation of Mr. Trump personally going on, but as he made clear today, that was months ago, not necessarily now. Americans need to have answers to those kinds of questions. And then I guess, depending on the answers to those questions, do we want to demand that our elected representatives initiate impeachment proceedings against President Trump? Because the notion that he can, with absolute impunity, obstruct justice by telling his FBI director to stop an investigation and then fire that director when he doesn't do it is extraordinarily dangerous and certainly would warrant at least the beginnings of impeachment proceedings.
Well, when I was asked, Esquio, what the left should do, I have no idea what the left should do. You know, I mean, the truth is half of the left thinks that this investigation itself is somewhat bogus. And I think we'll have some guests here in a moment to even get into that issue. I don't think the investigation is bogus. I think what people should do in general is try to demand more information and more transparency about all of these allegations, ranging from Russia and the allegation of Russia hacking the DNC emails to, you know, potential collusion of the Trump administration in that process. Because and actually, I found Comey's hearing today to be more refreshing than most of the other hearings I've heard so far, including the one that you've referenced many times yesterday with other intelligence directors. But even with Sally Yates and others, every hearing that we almost get is always just confirming what, and I think you can make that argument somewhat about today's hearing. You get a hearing that confirms what has already been reported, but then there's a whole lot more that they're still willing to say publicly because our secrets and the way that we conduct getting secrets is so important that I still feel like we're withholding a lot of information from the American people about what's actually going on.
It's an excellent point. And transparency is absolutely critical. Now, it may not be instant transparency all the time because there are intelligence matters that you don't want to broadcast to the whole world so that the Russians can find out the precise status at any given time of our investigation. But having witnesses like Mr. Comey, who himself insisted that his testimony be public to the maximum extent possible, is very important for all witnesses. Trying to come up with a way that these committees can, at least periodically, report back to the American people on how the investigation is going and what they're finding. Maybe a few details might have to be kept secret to keep the investigation going, but the American people ought to get as much transparency as they can and as soon as they can.
How really serious is this? James Comey was asked, and he said this is pretty serious in terms of just the danger that a adversary to this country was manipulating the elections. And hardly anyone, people have repeated it frequently, that look for them in 2020, look for them in 2018, that someone, that an adversary, not just someone, but an adversary, was muddling in the elections. Is that bad news? Is it, is the democracy in danger?
I think the democracy is in danger if we don't take steps to counter it. And you're absolutely right. It doesn't have to just be the Russians. There's no question that a political opponent could try to do some of the same things that they've done in terms of creating fake news or maybe even trying to hack into election machinery in some ways. There's no question that a lot of our election machinery is not protected against hacking as well as it should be. And that's one of the reasons why this investigation is important, to be able to document what the Russians did and what the vulnerabilities were is extremely important. And we need to take action at the federal and the state and local levels, since remember, so much of our election machinery is done in our states and in our communities.
Well, I wonder then, as the look out across the landscape, has this hearing sort of taken the air out of the this movement? Is there now cause for pause and relief, and we can go back to business as usual, or where will the government go from here, do you think?
Well, that's another critical question, and I think, again, the government needs to do a number of things. There needs to be a continuation of all of the investigations that are going forward, the special prosecutor as well as the congressional investigations. We'd hope a bipartisan commission might be a better way to do this. But then there also needs to be a strong determination to take action about keeping our election systems and other systems secure enough to prevent these kinds of attempts, whether by Russians or anybody else, from succeeding. And that's critical. In general, we give very little attention to our election system. Look at the debacle that happened in 2000, not because of Russian interference, but because of one Palm Beach County official who came up with that butterfly ballot and may have cost an election right then and there. We need to pay a lot more attention to the integrity of our election machinery. And, frankly, we need to pay a lot more attention to the integrity of our current federal government and of the shocking conduct that Mr. Comey describes, that the President of the United States himself did, and possibly some that the Attorney General did, despite his pledge to recuse himself from anything involving Russia. Now that the President has admitted that Russia was the reason that he fired Mr. Comey, how would it have been proper for Mr. Sessions to have been involved? There needs to be investigation, and there needs to be public demand that members of Congress take action on all of these fronts.
Elliot Mintzberg, Senior Fellow with People for the American Way, has researched and analyzed the Supreme Court, the Department of Justice, religious liberty, and other civil rights issues for more than three decades. Thank you for being with us.
You're more than welcome.
To Dennis Bernstein of KPFA and to Earl O'Ferry Hutchinson for being with us. This has been Pacifica Radio Network's national broadcast of former FBI Director James Comey's testimony to the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence.
Thanks.
I'm Askia Muhammad. My co-host is Mitch Jesuits. Mitch, you get the last word.
Goodbye, everybody.